Welcome to Aviation Safety Magazine's continuing podcast series. Today we're talking about unusual attitudes. And with us today is Greg Lewis, Deputy Director at the National Test Pilot School in California. Greg, if you would, please tell us a little bit about the National Test Pilot School.
The National Test Pilot School is, as far as I know, the only civil test pilot school in the world. There are six other test pilot schools, all military. Two U.S. military, Navy and Air Force, one in the U.K., one in France, one in India, and one in Brazil. But our school has been was formed in 1981. We just celebrated our 25th anniversary last year, and we do flight test training for people all around the world.
So, Greg, I think everybody would like to hear a little bit about your background.
I joined the Air Force after college, master's in aero, then pilot training 20 years in the Air Force. During that 20 years, I attended the Air Force military test pilot school, later instructed there and enjoyed it, and that's why I'm here today. But I did 20 years in the military doing flight tests, 11 of those years at Edwards Air Force Base in California.
So define for us, Greg, if you will, an unusual attitude.
An unusual attitude is when you exceed the boundaries of normal flight, typically inadvertently. If you do it on purpose, then I think we'd call it acrobatics or intentional spin training. But if you inadvertently get into an unusual attitude, that would be the problem area.
So how does a pilot just flying along find him or herself in an unusual attitude in an upset situation?
Probably the single biggest cause is, I would think, flying inadvertently into IMC conditions. VFR pilots inadvertently pressing on in deteriorating weather and getting into a condition where they're not really equipped with training to press on.
And what would be some other causes?
Could be things like upset induced by wake turbulence or mountain wave activity or just distraction.
So, Greg, tell us about some of the different recovery methods.
Once you've got experience in being in unusual attitudes, recovery is actually quite easy. If you recognize the situation and are trained to do it, you can get out of it. But if you're put into a situation which you're completely unfamiliar with, our school also does upset training for commercial airline pilots and charter pilots. And once you get into the situation and are shown how to recover, it's actually quite easy. It's just that if you're put in there inadvertently and you're not ready for it, the instinctive reaction can be counterproductive.
If you find yourself inverted at a low altitude, obviously you don't want to pull back on the yoke.
That's the big deal, and that's what we've emphasized over and over again in our upset recovery training. Unload and roll and get the lift vector pointed up before pulling.
In your courses, I assume you guys cover instrument and visual recovery methods.
We do. We do. We fly almost exclusively in visual conditions, and we do most of this in actual airplanes, not simulators. We emphasize, I guess, the visual recovery techniques.
Now, can you practice this in a simulator? How does that compare to an actual aircraft?
It can compare quite favorably. It depends upon the simulator, of course. There's also the lack of the vestibular clues, the ones where you get those motions on your body, of course. But the procedures, I think, can work quite well.
Now, tell us, Greg, a little bit about the different terminology. What all types of attitudes, unusual attitudes, does upset involve?
Well, upset is just having an unusual attitude, not, as the article goes on to talk about mainly, it not being in a spin, but simply being in an unusual attitude with a lift vector pointing the wrong way. A spin is completely different, of course, and that's where you have a sustained yaw rate and angle of attack above stall. And the recoveries are obviously completely different.
What are some of the key differences between, say, an upset or unusual attitude recovery versus spin recovery?
The key thing about a spin recovery is you have to recognize that you're in a spin. If you don't initially recognize that you're in a spin, sustained yaw rate, angle of attack above stall, repetitive motion, then the control inputs may actually make things worse initially.
Why are spin recovery techniques different in different airplanes?
Well, it's all about the aerodynamic and moments of inertia and the design of the airplane. If you have a lot of mass in the fuselage and very little mass in the wings, then we call that a fuselage-loaded airplane, and that behaves completely differently than an airplane that has a relatively high moment of inertia in the wings and less in the fuselage. most of the audience for this podcast and the article would be interested principally in the wing-loaded aircraft. And they generally tend to recover the same way. There's slightly different standard or variations of a standard spin recovery methods employed. And different ones work differently, better or worse in different airplanes, principally then because of slight differences in the tail. For instance, if you're holding the stick fully aft, it may make the rudder more effective. In order to recover from a spin, you have to do one of two things. You have to stop either the yaw rate, or you have to reduce the angle of attack below stall. Either one should break the autorotative couple, the thing that's keeping the angle of attack above stall. In some airplanes, you simply push the stick forward. It may not be sufficient aerodynamically to push the nose down below stall because of the autorotative couple. So you may have to stop the yaw rate. It all depends upon the airplane design.
So I'm sure if you have a student show up with a particular type aircraft, then you tailor the training to that aircraft.
Exactly, for the type of airplane. And the way it's done is people will analyze the design, perhaps use a spin tunnel in order to see what control strategies would be most effective. Then in flight test development, prior to certification, investigate various control strategies to see which ones will work in that particular airplane. When you do that, of course, you have some alternate methods for recovery, like an airplane spin chute. All flight tests of spins require a spin chute if they're done by FAA DERs or FAA test pilots. But once you've determined what control strategy works in a particular design, then that's the strategy that's used for the certification program, and it's the control input strategy that's published in the airplane flight manual.
So if a guy like me showed up at your school in a Beechcraft Bonanza and wanted spin training, you'd actually obviously have to do that in a different aircraft.
Absolutely. We don't generally train people how to fly airplanes. That's not our business. But if you were wanting to get spin training, and I would highly recommend that anybody who flies general aviation airplanes get some spin training in an approved airplane with an approved instructor who's qualified to do it. There's lots of airplanes that can do that, from Cessna 152s. We use chipmunks here at our school, De Havilland chipmunks, DHC-1s, a very effective spin trainer.
Right.
Pitt Special would be great. Just being in the situation and recovering is such a confidence booster that it'll prevent, hopefully, someone in an inadvertent encounter from panicking and doing the exact wrong thing, which is actually quite easy to do.
Years ago, everybody earning a private pilot's license received spin training. Greg, do you have any idea or insight into why that went away?
There's pros and cons. There's increased accidents rates in the training due to the training.
I see.
I mean, there's just some fraction of the time that people doing the training will experience some abnormality, and it'll end up in an accident. So there, it's clear that spin training is not without risk. However, lack of spin training is also a risk. And it's just you have to decide on balance which is the least risk. I'm a strong proponent that spin training is an effective way to reduce overall accident rates.
Now, I saw on your website that you guys actually offer a spin training course.
The principal work that we do at the National Test Pilot School is train people to do flight tests of airplanes. We don't train them to specifically avoid spins or upsets. However, we have offered and do continue to offer an upset spin recovery course. That's a 3-day course. And our principal customers for that are charter pilots. Bombardier, every airplane they sell, provides two crew members training at our 3-day upset recovery course. But it's not our main business. Our main business is flight test training.
Greg Lewis, Deputy Director at the National Test Pilot School. You can check out their website at www.ntps.edu. For more information on this story, log on to aviationsafetymagazine.com. And for breaking general aviation news, you can check out avweb.com. Comments on this audio cast are welcome at audionews@avweb.com. For Aviation Safety Magazine, this is Mike Blakeney reporting.